Blog Talk Radio.
Welcome, ladies and gentlemen, to the South Bay Show, Preparing for Disaster in America, on June 24th, 2014. I'm your host, Joe Terry, and the South Bay Show is brought to you by the Academy of Foreign Languages. If you have any interest in learning a new language or brushing up on existing language skills, you should know about the Academy of Foreign Languages. Located in Palos Verdes, the Academy of Foreign Languages specializes in the art of communication. Their mission is to provide the finest language instruction possible. They recognize that each student has distinctive needs and craft their teaching technique to optimize an individual's particular learning skills. At the Academy of Foreign Languages, they strive to create a comfortable environment conducive to learning. So whether you're learning a new language or would simply like to converse in your native tongue, the Academy of Foreign Languages can accommodate you. For more information, visit their website at www.academyofforeignlanguages, that's all spelled out, academyofforeignlanguages.com, or call 310-975-4133. That's 310-975-4133. You can find out more about us at facebook.com/The South Bay Show or visit our website at thesouthbayshow.com. Preparing for disaster in America. This is a subject that can never be treated lightly, but we do our best to make it interesting, engaging, and yes, even entertaining to learn the few key skills and primary information that could save your life, your family's lives, that of a neighbor in a time of crisis, or the life of a treasured pet. Our mission is to engage hearts and minds and build knowledge and skills to help you prepare for whatever may come. This show is a true collaboration with Solid Roots in the Community and a partnership with the Official Disaster Preparation Establishment. Our producer is founder and president of the local Manhattan Beach CERT Association and the Red Cross's community ambassador to Manhattan Beach, California, Mr. George Butts. Hey, George, how are you doing today?
Good morning, Joe. It's an hour earlier here where I am, but the sun, well, I was going to say the sun is up. The sun didn't set last night, so...
it's a wonderful thing. That's why I added that you're the Red Cross's community ambassador to Manhattan Beach, California, because you're not in California, are you? No, he isn't.
No, I'm on the Kenai Peninsula.
Okay. In Alaska. All right. And, of course, with us today is owner, producer, writer of South Bay by Jackie.com, Jackie Balestra. Hey, Jackie, how are you doing today?
I'm doing well this morning, Joe. And that George, I hope he's not setting a precedent here doing the show from remote locations. I need my vacation.
Yes. That's right.
No, ma'am. Good morning.
Okay.
Okay. Well, this is going to be a great show, a unique show, because we have a unique talent. Jackie, who's with us today?
We have a real professional this morning. Our guest this morning is survivor Jack Job out of Denver. Jack is an Emmy-nominated photojournalist, wordsmith, voice actor, inventor of a new rescue tool, and common sense survival instructor. At the University of Oklahoma, Jack originally began as a math major, but was encouraged to switch to radio and TV because of his voice. His first show was Datebook, and his favorite interview was with Bruce Lee. He earned an Emmy nomination with Bob Dodson of NBC News, to whom he gives 90% of the credit. After watching the footage of the 2010 Haiti earthquake, Jack realized how unprepared his family was for a disaster of that magnitude and got to work. His website, www.survivorjack.com, offers free online interviews of survival plans, scenarios, information, and inexpensive survival tips. Jack's mission is equipping and empowering people through entertaining first aid and survival education. And today, he's going to share some of his insights with us. Welcome to the show, Jack. We are so glad you could join us this morning.
Well, thank you. It's always nice to... excuse me. My name is Jack Job. I must have had a frog in my throat. I'm delighted to be here with you guys and happy to entertain your audience.
Well, thank you very much for that, Kermit Jack. That was wonderful. And, you know, voice acting has always been fascinating to me, but you've been doing it for some time now. Why do you think that it's so engaging for people? It live, recorded, it's always entertaining.
Right, and I grew up in the great age of voices. I'm rapidly approaching 70. And so you think back to voices that I grew up with. I had kind of an embarrassing situation, Joe. I was at a trade show, and a guy was standing in front of me, and he goes, "Well, what was the first voice you ever did?" And I looked up at this big, beautiful, smiling, ebony face, and I thought for a second, and I went, "This may be a little embarrassing, but do you remember Amos and Andy?" Mm-hmm. And he goes, "Oh, yeah, man, I loved it when I was a kid." And I said, "Well, there was one guy who was such a good con man that I loved the way that he spoke." I said, "Now, I want you to imagine about a four-year-old white kid, skinny as a rail, marching into the kitchen, looking up at his mother and going, 'Now, Mama, I don't think I like the way dinner been going here lately, and I think we're going to have to take a entirely different approach to the way that we look at the cooking.'" And he just falls out laughing. He goes, "My God, your first voice was black." And I said, "Yeah, I think it was." I said, "That was the first one where it really caught my attention." And I right. became fascinated with Mel Blanc and, you know, the, "Listen, sweetheart, you've got such an interesting way of talking there, Shane. And I'm telling you, you get out there in the world, you've got to understand there's a lot of strange people." So I began to catch on to these voices, and as I became Survivor Jack, I thought, you know what, why not carry this out there into the world? Because talking about death and dying is really hard for most people. To talk about you are your doctor until help arrives. So why don't you know first aid?
Right.
I mean, it's crazy to think that people have bled to death simply because they didn't know that if they had taken off their belt or their necklace or whatever they could have used and tourniqueted their own leg. So I'm really going out there into the world and saying, look, it is time that we look at restructuring the school system and teach things that really apply to the world that we exist in. And that includes things like school shootings. Mm-hmm. Because if your child were to be in a school shooting, wouldn't you pray that every other child in that school knew first aid and could get to them as quickly as possible?
Mm-hmm.
And that's exactly what now exists. And I don't care whether it's the Aurora Theater, which is my closest one, whether it's Columbine, a school not too far from me. Mass casualty situations require a massive response. And we cannot simply have a couple of people designated to be the one because they might be the ones that are injured.
Right.
And the rest of us need to pitch in.
Now, for the longest time, school children have been doing the standard fire drills. Are you recommending, Survivor Jack, that schools add active shooter drills to their normal daily monthly habits?
As the children get older, I think you bring them in, and at early education, whether that's preschool, first grade, you begin to introduce them to the understanding of what's going on with themselves. This eventually will turn into, when we get up into the areas of middle school, into biology classes and that.
Right.
But we teach kids, why do we bleed? Why does a needle hurt if we get an inoculation? What would it mean if a child fell to the floor and started shaking their body frantically? Well, they're having a seizure.
Right.
I think those are real life scenarios that children at the youngest possible age need to understand. How many times, Joe and George and Jackie, have you heard stories where some little kid, 3 years old, dialed 911 and said, "My mommy won't wake up"? It's
right.
not ever too young to start teaching our children about the realities of the world.
And I tell you, if we can get people like Kermit maybe to pitch in and help, you know, I'm sure they'd be glad to use their talent that way.
Right. Why? If Kermit came, they would. If Kermit spoke, they would listen.
All right, but if you're going to talk about serious stuff, maybe we need a pirate, because you understand, Joe, you're only as sharp as your blade.
You got it?
I got it.
And it's true. If you go and talk to an emergency room doctor, they tell you more people come in because they were trying to cut something with a dull blade and they were working so hard, the knife slipped and they stabbed themselves or ran it across their own arm.
Mm. I did that.
There you go.
I ended up in the emergency room trying to cut a bagel.
Right. So survival works at all levels. And we start off thinking about household accidents and stuff like that. So I was serious about it. People need to understand first aid, the basics.
Right.
But they also need to know how to make a fire. I want you guys, any of the three of you, to tell me honestly, how many teenagers do you know that if you dropped them off in the woods could survive for more than a few hours, could make a fire, could build a shelter?
Right. Oh, you mean drop them off without their iPad or their iPhone?
None. Right. And let me tell you, one of the things that we can already begin to see, Jackie, you mentioned the iPod thing, is if you take away those devices now, they have physical withdrawal symptoms. What would happen, and I'll give you this one to think about, and we can talk about it in detail later. What if the American power grid went down because of a solar flare, which happened very close to us very recently, or a terrorist attack? We've actually had a terrorist attack on an electrical substation in San Jose.
Mm-hmm.
Are you three prepared to live for 6 months to 18 months with no electricity?
Oh.
Well, actually, we are.
Good. There's
yeah.
one.
Yeah.
Go. Wait. Jackie, you need fuel. You need fuel for that generator of yours.
Yeah.
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 And fuel is pumped with what, George?
Electricity.
Yeah.
Well, I have several cars that I always keep full of gas, so I imagine I could just siphon that gas off of there. That would get me going, right?
Yeah, it would keep you running for a while.
Yeah.
For a week.
Yep.
Yeah.
Maybe.
Yeah.
Exactly.
Well, I'm not going to be using my hair dryer.
But do you seriously see the issue that we've got with our teenagers, for example? The world is run by nature, not by man.
Right.
And we have seen the devastating earthquakes from the 250,000 killed in the Southeast Asia one a few years back. There is a fault line off the coast of Alaska, sorry, George, that is as big, if not bigger, and with a lot less notice than what happened in Japan.
Mm-hmm.
Okay, excuse me, yesterday.
Yeah,
on the
did
way
you feel
up.
It? Did you feel it?
No, I was in the air, but some of the people here did. Yesterday afternoon, 24 kilometers from Little Sitkin, which is out, you know, probably...
Is that the end of the Aleutians?
Yeah, it's out there, quite close to the end. An 8.0
mm-hmm.
earthquake that warranted... the west coast of California and Oregon to think about tsunamis. It was deep. It was over 100 kilometers deep.
Mm-hmm.
But, mm-hmm. Yeah, people here on the Kenai Peninsula said that they did feel it. It wasn't a lot, but, I mean, they're, you know, you're 700-800 miles away from it here probably.
We've been hearing a lot about Oklahoma's earthquakes, and, of course, we're all aware of California's, and Washington, D.C. had one that cracked so many things last year.
Mm-hmm.
But we forget that Alaska has half of all of the earthquakes in the United States.
Mm-hmm.
It is a hugely seismic active, the largest one ever singly. By the way, forget Alaska for one moment. Think of the 48 contiguous states. Where were the three largest earthquakes in the history of the Americas?
Wow.
One of them was the New Madrid Fault.
All three of them were the New Madrid Fault, Jackie.
Okay, yep. Ding, 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 ding.
Yep,
ding.
There were three within
deep.
6 months, and they were so large that the Mississippi River on the last one literally ran backward for 24 hours, creating an American tsunami because the water that should have been going down was now coming back, meeting the water coming out, and it flooded out across the area. Entire valleys disappeared. It was so big it rang church bells in Boston. Now, are St. Louis and New Orleans and all of the major cities, Cincinnati and so forth, along the Mississippi, are they built buildings that are earthquake protected?
No.
Then everybody's car should be outfitted with water and food and sleeping bags and a few other necessities, toilet paper, hand sanitizer, stuff like that, that they could live for a couple of days until the balance might be restored. If it was so major, everybody knows from Katrina, it takes the government 3 to 5 days to react and mobilize.
Right.
We saw it in Japan. We saw it in Haiti. So
right. I knew this was going to be fun. we're talking with survivor Jack Job on the South Bay Show today, and it's going to be fun, ladies and gentlemen. If you'd like to join in the conversation or have a conversation with Kermit, please join us at 714-242-5288. That's 714-242-5288. Give us a call and ask a question or make a comment. Now, Survivor Jack, I have to ask you a question. If you were to guess, what percentage of people out there are actually well prepared for disaster? In their local community, the disaster that is most fitting for their local community, whether it be flood or earthquake, what percentage of people are prepared, would you say?
The studies are as low as 8% to as high as about 20%. Now, the 20% studies usually include people like campers and people that have RVs that are a little bit better off than others. So if you look at 1 out of 10 of us, that would be an enormous burden on the people that are prepared if there were an emergency. And that's one of the things that I'm taking to the street, Joe, is that we need to build at a community level in a way that we haven't considered before. We need to look at isolating ourselves from the electrical grid. There's no reason that a city like LA or Boulder, Colorado is looking at it right now to literally say, we don't want to be on the grid. Why would we want to be tied to that thing that with one electromagnetic pulse could be reduced to nothing?
Right.
We'd rather take care of ourselves. We'd rather find our own water. We'd rather geothermal. We'd rather figure out other ways to grow community gardens and support ourselves with short-distance gardening runs rather than relying on long-distance groceries.
I've been studying food security a great deal in the past several weeks. And did you know that just 2% of the food grown in the United States is consumed locally, just 2%. And the average number of food miles is a measure of how many miles your food has to travel to your plate. The term farm to table is a huge phrase in the world of food security. The average is 1,500 miles for food to travel from farm to table in the United States, 1,500 miles if you include your vegetables and your meats. Do you have a meat packing facility in your backyard, Survivor Jack?
We do have some local meat packing, but it's at a relatively small level. I've been encouraged by what I'm seeing is the increasing number of people going to hydroponics. And I think that's going to be more useful and easier for people in the future as the technology improves. But it still requires an enormous amount of water. So that may be our first great jeopardy, Joe, George, and Jackie. If you look at what's happening down in the Southwest with Texas, and let's forget the people that don't want to believe in climate change for a moment. Let's just look at normal weather patterns, just normal weather patterns. We've seen droughts in the geologic record that show that the drought down in the Texas, Oklahoma, Southwest, you know, Mexico, New Mexico area and so forth, that's gone on sometimes for 40 to as long as 200 years. what would we do if we lose California as a food-producing area because we run out of water?
Mm-hmm.
And Colorado as one of the suppliers of water, and we supply, to believe it or not, about 20-something states mm-hmm. with our water.
Mm-hmm.
We're running out. How many more people can we take on as residents before we just have to say, no, we've got to guard our borders? And there's towns in Texas that have no water coming up.
Mm-hmm. It's there are so many different issues that, you know, it isn't about climate change. It really isn't about carbon, global warming. It's really about the basics, like you say, water, drought, food not being produced locally. Those issues are certainly man-made, and those are the issues that will certainly keep us from eating in the large, if a disaster occurs. Where do you think the solution will come from? Do you think it'll come from the educational system? Do you think it'll come from activists, which I have to count myself as one, doing an online radio show called Disaster in America? I think I have to count us all as one.
Right.
Where do you think the solution will come from?
I do believe that education, but I think the education can come from a much broader arena than most of us have looked at. Let me give you a couple of quick examples. On Hawaii 5-0, a popular television show, about two seasons back, the main character accidentally falls off a ledge. He's wearing his backpack. He's out hiking. He breaks his arm. He unslings his backpack and one-handed takes out a roll of duct tape, opens a knife one-handed, proceeds to cut the tape, immobilize his arm so that he can be pulled back up this cliff.
Hmm.
That is an extraordinary good bit of storytelling, condensed for television, of course, but it really did show a practical skill that could be used, and the average person might go, you know what, I never thought about carrying duct tape in my backpack before. You know what, I carry duct tape for my 3D, for my first aid kit.
Mm-hmm.
Because I can cut the duct tape into just about any size strip for anything that I want, long wounds, short wounds, you know, individual bandages, you know, it's an amazingly remarkable thing.
Mm-hmm.
Those little tips that we've forgotten can be taught to us through our media, through good writers of books, through our other forms of education like the school system, our churches, our mm-hmm. offices practicing disaster training.
Excuse me?
Yes, George?
How about some crazy glue?
Absolutely. Invented to seal battlefield wounds, and most people have forgotten this.
Yep.
People go, are you nuts? I'd never put that on me. And I'm going, are you nuts? That's what it was invented for.
Mm-hmm.
And they look at me like I've lost my mind, and finally they'll go Google a thing and go, my God, you're right. It was invented for that. Not to pour down the middle of the open wound, but to pull the wound together, use the super glue to seal the skin shut so you could get them back to the help that they needed at the first aid tip.
Joe, you had mentioned where do you think the solution's going to come from.
Right.
I don't think we can depend on the government or any big institutions coming up with the solution. I think it's going to be grassroots.
Mm-hmm.
And just from what we've seen, you know, in the last 10 years of people becoming self-sufficient, it's going to be totally grassroots.
Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm.
You know, what Jack does, what Survivor Jack does, he'll go into schools or groups of people and share his knowledge with them. That's going to be how it's going to happen.
Well, let me take you to a bigger size picture, Jackie. Do you know who Rick Rascorla is?
No.
He's one of my heroes, and I think he ought to be a bigger named American hero.
Hmm.
First off, he, if nothing else, if you remember a famous book about We Are Soldiers, and it was made into a movie by Mel Gibson.
Yes,
The original book cover, the very first book cover, that is Rick Rascorla on the cover. So he had already earned his American heroism in Vietnam. But he came back and went into security, and he worked in the World Trade Centers. And I forget the financial companies that he worked for, but he went and said, I want an analysis done of what our threats are here. We're way up high in this building. We're far above where firemen could reach with ladders and fire hoses. What other issues do we face? He brought in a consultant. They looked at the building, and they came away with the conclusion that somebody was going to put a bomb in the basement and blow up the World Trade Centers. They laughed at him. And, of course, Port Authority did virtually nothing. And a year or so later, they put a truck in the basement and tried to blow it up. Unfortunately, they didn't succeed. He then did another analysis and said, then they will come again, and they will try to hit us with planes. That's who Rick Rascorla is.
Did he really?
And he is absolutely credited with saving more than 2,600 lives because he forced those people in a major corporation to stop in the middle of their day, stop their phone calls, stop their meetings, and walk down four flights of stairs to practice in case those buildings got hit by planes. And he said, don't listen to the Port Authority. When those people in the government tell you to sit where you are, you be running, get out of this building, but do it in an orderly fashion. They had 200 guests that morning, and every one of those people got out along with 2,400 people, and Rick went back into the building to try to save others when it collapsed.
Mm.
Oh, my goodness. Now, have Joe, George, have you heard the story?
I've never heard the story.
I have not.
Neither
and
have I. That's amazing.
What? This is the movie that I'm going to write. Rick Rascorla, the man who predicted 9/11.
Yeah, I think it's National Geographic's done like a one-hour documentary about him, and it's really, when it's around 9/11 time, you'll see it. It's run every year, and it is an amazing, amazing man. And he would not buckle down to the corporations, even though he worked for them. He said, your life depends on what I'm teaching you, and you will stand up, and you will do these disaster drills. Too bad you don't like it. Too bad it's uncomfortable. Too bad you're so fat that four flights of stairs hurt you. You need to understand your life depends on this. And
four flights of stairs?
Yeah, he would make them walk down four flights and then back up four flights, I believe it was, to have them practice keeping in shape.
Yeah.
But it was at least enough to give them the sense of what it would be like were they to have to suffer this, and then they did have to suffer it.
While directing the evacuation, his actions on the day saved over 2,700 lives.
Right.
Wow. That's amazing.
Now that, Jackie, to me, is grassroots. It is a survivor, Jack, and it is me taking it out into the community. You guys know that I'm trying to get on the Ellen DeGeneres show. So that's the kind of thing that we can take to the public and say, hey, look, why does it have to be depressing? You know, why can't we show it in an entertaining way? Blacklist had a guy that was badly wounded in the leg, and they tourniqueted him. There was a show on the other evening where they showed another first aid technique. It was only a short-run show, like 10 women or something like that. And one of the guys was injured, and they poured black pepper in the cut because black pepper is a blood clotting agent.
Hmm.
Well, how many of us sit in a restaurant, somebody gets cut with a piece of glass from a broken wine glass or something, and we sit there wondering what we should do? Get up, pour the pepper on there, wrap it up tight, and wait for the medics to arrive.
Right.
Yeah, but do you think somebody's going to – I'm not sure that anybody will stand still while you try to pour black pepper on
the wound. Yeah, good point.
Okay, George, and you know why? They're
but
uneducated.
I agree with you. Yeah.
But they're uneducated. And yeah, if we educated them and they went, oh, my God, I could do this for myself. Hey, give me the pepper. I'll drop it right here. That's the education, and that's our media, that's our writers, that's our people that write stupid stories. I mean, how many of these teenage slasher movies you go, any idiot on earth would have left, and they're walking into the room? You know, that's just lazy writing. We can educate and entertain and make it really, really, really vital. I mean, you can hear the passion in my voice. And if we needed somebody else to bring a different point of view, we could do that too. Because it's the same all over the world, you know? My children need to know how to do first aid as well as your kids.
Right.
That's what we try to do, right, guys?
That's it.
We are trying, and ladies and gentlemen, you're listening to the South Bay Show, and we're talking with Survivor Jack, Jack Jobe, an amazing repository of information and wisdom, and we're looking forward to talking with him some more after the break. We're going to take a station break, and we're going to thank a sponsor. Jackie, who are we going to thank today?
Well, Joe, you know it's never too early to begin planning your financial future. When it comes to protecting your assets and hard-earned dollars, you'll want experienced professionals with a proven track record and flawless reputation on your team. Briganti, Cameron, Waters & Strong, Certified Public Accountants and Consultants, is the largest full-service accounting firm in the South Bay, and they are dedicated to providing professional services of the highest quality. The partners are South Bay residents deeply committed to serving the communities where they live, work, and play. They support a variety of local nonprofit organizations such as Skate Park PV, Palos Verdes Peninsula Land Conservancy, the Torrance South Bay YMCA, Rotary, and Pediatric Therapy Network, among others. BCWS prides itself on providing national accounting technical experience with the personal attention of a local company. This commitment to uphold high standards of excellence has proven key to their success and first-rate reputation. Their ultimate goal and reward is to see their clients achieve financial success as they define it, whether that means helping them to reduce their tax burden, assisting them with planning to ensure their financial security, succession planning, exit strategies, and wealth transfer. The partners and professionals of BCWS are committed to providing their clients with the expertise and guidance they need to reach their financial goals. For more information, visit the website at www.bcws.com or call 310-542-0011.
Well, I am for one, convinced that some aspect of the solution is going local. We've talked a lot about shop local. We've talked a lot about local food security, growing your own food, which many people probably aren't going to do, but as more and more businesses begin to establish local greenhouses and grow food locally for farmers markets and so forth, I think that will contribute to food security. The one thing that we aren't doing that no one seems to have an answer for is water. Water is a huge issue. People aren't prepared, and I have to ask you, Survivor Jack, if 20% of people are prepared, and that's if 20%
optimistic.
Let's say that's true. That still leaves 80% unprepared. And in a scant 3 days, you talked about electricity being out for weeks or longer. But in a real disaster here in Southern California, an earthquake, you know, it could be a week or two before services are back to normal. Water mains could be broken. Things could be drastically wrong for a month or two at least. Water, just 3 to 5 days, Jack, people are going to start getting desperate. What do you think people can do to protect themselves? You know, we've actually had a show, and we were very, very careful about it. We had a show about protecting yourself and the weaponry that you would need to protect your own home.
Right.
Talk a little bit about that.
Okay. Water is one of the key critical things. So you asked earlier about things that I've realized and rules. So one of the first rules in survival is there's the rule of threes. You got about 3 minutes to get air. So if you're underwater, if you're under an avalanche, whatever, you have a very limited time. Next is water. You got about 3 days to find water.
Right.
Let me tell you, the last day and a half will be torture. By the middle of the first day and a half, you can be hallucinating. Your body will begin to shut down. By the third day, you're definitely hallucinating. I was sitting in a pharmacy here waiting for a prescription one day, and the guy next to me was talking to another fella, and he said, do you know what zombies are? And the guy goes, well, yeah. And he said, well, I almost became a zombie. And the guy goes, my God, what happened? He goes, well, I ran out of water in the desert one time. And I thought I could just walk back and get to the road. And he said, by the third day, he said, I was dragging my legs, my left arm was totally locked up by myself, and I was slobbering, and he said, I looked just like a zombie almost. That's what the zombie apocalypse is. I mean, that's really what it is people running out of water. So we've got 2 50-gallon barrels. We've got we don't throw out glass jugs anymore. We fill them full of water and stick them in the back of something.
Mm-hmm.
And even things that have had dangerous chemicals, we mark them with a skull and crossbones, and we fill those jugs full of water because we will have to flush down waste, perhaps, as you mentioned, if the sewer systems are not running properly.
Right.
So what I saw in the Haiti earthquake, if I can ramble on for another moment, while watching the coverage, it was 15 days later, Joe, and there was a little girl named Darlene Etienne who was still struggling for life, 15 days. That's just remarkable. But she happened to have been trapped in a bathroom, and she had a little bit of running water. As they pulled her to the surface, and that moment that her face hit the rescue lights, I had a vision, nothing religious, but I saw myself spending the rest of my life showing people what I'd learned, and I spent 4 hours writing and drawing pictures of what I'd seen.
Mm-hmm.
And the thing that I would turn around and say is that on a day-to-day thing in terms of preparing America, we need to remember that what's most important is how you are in the moment that disaster occurs.
Hmm.
What do you have on you?
Mm-hmm.
What is near you that you could reach? And what do you know? And that's where your new life begins if you survived the disaster.
Right, right.
So what do you have on you? If the disaster happened right this second, George, Jackie, and Joe, what do you have on you that you could consider survival material?
Right.
My Leatherman.
There you go. Good
okay.
start. Got
there
yours,
you go.
Joe?
I have a Leatherman, yes.
It's on your body.
It's not on my body.
Within
Close.
Reach.
Yes.
If it's within reach, I'll count it. So that's why I say purses, backpacks, anything that you can reach. But that's where your life begins.
Right.
10 fishing rods.
That could help bring in the food, couldn't it? Yeah, exactly. But do you guys carry a poncho? I've got one in my back pocket. An emergency blanket, for heaven's sakes. One of those little Mylar emergency blankets. We're talking a dollar poncho, a dollar emergency blanket, or $2 emergency blanket.
Mm-hmm.
You know, a whistle. George, you're going out in a very wilderness area. Every single person on your group carrying their whistle around their neck or hooked to their belt?
Yeah, I don't think so.
There you
no.
go. Well, let me tell you, that's communication at a distance that you don't get any other way. Confronting a wild animal, a bear, a wolf, something like that, a shrill whistle can startle them.
George, are they concerned about bear where you're going?
Well, in some cases, yeah.
Mm-hmm.
We will do a fly out later into a lake and then river where there are a lot of bears that are up there.
Where there is salmon, there are bears.
Right.
Yes.
Yep. Right.
Yep.
Right.
Just real quickly, I know totally off topic, but speaking of bears, the place where John goes fishing every July up in Idaho,
mm-hmm.
His buddies were up there last month. One of his buddies was out there fishing, turned around, huge bear coming at him.
Wow.
Aggressively. He shot him and killed him.
Really?
Yeah. Yeah.
Wow.
It happens.
Be prepared.
Yep.
If all you had was your Leatherman. Hey, remember, never take a Leatherman to a bear fight.
Right.
Yep, or a knife to a gunfight.
Right.
Well, that's what we forget sometimes about the whole David and Goliath story. We all go, oh my God, Goliath was this giant. When we had this little tiny kid on the other side, but the little tiny kid was carrying a .45 by today's standards because he was going to sling a rock into a temple you know, side of the guy's skull at 40 at the size, or sorry, at the speed of a 45 bullet.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah.
The match was not a mismatch, except we sent a guy with a knife to a gunfight.
Right.
Yeah. So I wanted to ask Jack. So where do you go to teach what you know? Do you go into the schools, community centers, YMCAs, things like that?
Here I am, Jackie. Look, I grew up in radio. I don't know whether I mentioned, but I used to be Jolly Jack Randall around Now to Sound. So to get KCCO, let's take a pick of the back of the back of the stack and play some tracks.
Wow.
So why not take this voice, why not take these acting creds and take it to the people? And that's hence the Ellen DeGeneres attempt.
Right.
And I'm using this for radios and broadcasts, television shows like Doomsday Preppers. I've been on a couple of those episodes. Fox News. That's where I'm taking it and saying, look, it is your local responsibility. You need to talk to your school system and say, this is insane. What are we teaching kids algebra? Now, I'm not saying algebra is bad, but when was the last time you used algebra?
Mm-hmm.
But first aid, how many car wrecks have you seen or driven by and going, God, if I knew something about first aid, I'd stop.
Mm-hmm.
Well, let me tell you, at 20 years old, I saw a car wreck and helped to pull the door off of this horribly smashed car and stand there helplessly going, my God, I don't know what to do now. And I watched a young man die within about a minute before anybody could get there in the way of ambulance or other first aid. And there was a cop standing there and a newspaper reporter, and none of us knew what to do.
Wow.
And it just leaves a mark that, my God, I'm going to go do this. I mean, how would you feel if you were watching your spouse and you didn't know what to do? Now, George will tell you how important something like CERT is, and they help our communities get trained all over this country. But what if they were getting fed children coming out of schools that already knew the basics of first aid and the basics of basic survival?
Right, right. Now, Survivor Jack, I have to ask you, you know, lots and lots of people watch television. I don't know what the number is, but let's say it's 90%
okay.
of the people watch television. They watch television not because they have to, but because they like it. How do we get people to like being prepared?
We do it in a way that is entertaining. We could do a television show in which we show real-world situations on the reality television side
mm-hmm.
and say, look, do you remember this, or have you ever thought about what happens in a car? My son one day called from Fort Collins, and he was the second at a light, and the woman that came in third didn't stop. And he was sitting in his car, which was now kind of like an accordion, waiting for the police to bust him out. And they had to come break his windows and cut the seatbelt and get him out.
Mm-hmm.
What if the car had been on fire?
Right.
What if he didn't have a way that he could just reach down to a tool, smash that window, slice through that seatbelt, and crawl out of that car?
I have that tool.
Exactly.
In my car.
Right. And we need to teach people this, and we can do it with entertaining things. Now, on the commercial side, there's no reason why we can't come up with video games that teach first aid.
Right.
Why can't we do if we like war stuff, why don't we insist
yeah.
that shooter games, that there's always one level, Joe, that's all I'm asking, just one level in a shooter game where the partner gets shot and you got to fix them before you can move to the next level.
Okay. There you go. Corman.
Yeah.
There you go. There is a possibility there.
Oh, and many more.
There are so many more.
Yeah.
Survivor Jack Job, we're talking with, and we haven't had anyone call in, but I would love to have a caller call in and want to talk and ask a question of Survivor Jack. The number is 714-242-5288. That's 714-242-5288. And George, I have to ask if you're prepared. Do you have some notes for future shows?
Yes, I do. Next week, of course, a little over a week from now is the 4th of July. The true, we've had our Memorial Day. Summer has started, but next week we are going to discuss summer safety, cookouts, things that can happen, whether you're at the lake or fireworks. Former chief of Santa Monica, California Fire Chief Jim Hone will be our guest, and we will talk about safety, and that'll be next Tuesday morning's show. Coming up here also, prior to the show, it is after the show, but on 7-6, 4th of July weekend, is the Manhattan Beach Grand Prix bike race, the oldest continuous bike race in the United States. That will be held in Manhattan Beach, and we as an organization will back up and provide first aid assistance with the fire department. I want to give a big shout out to our CERT supporters and members, because on July 12th is our annual meeting, board of directors, elections, and picnic for the family, July 12th at Poliwag. And then here we go. We will talk briefly, just real quick, on July 19th. We will be offering a Red Cross first aid, CPR, and AED training class. And, of course, anybody interested can contact me at info@mbcerta.org.
I have one thing to add.
Yep.
I received an email yesterday from Hermosa Beach. They are really cracking down the 4th of July this year. They're pulling out all the stops again. Remember last year they had a whole bunch of additional police forces, sheriff's department. They had helicopters. They had mounted
horses.
Officers.
Yes.
Yeah. Yeah. They and this year they're making it very clear: if you are caught drinking, you are going to have your license revoked.
Well,
whether you're driving or not,
if
you're caught drinking in public. If you're an underage drinker, they're taking your license away.
Mm-hmm.
So they're getting very serious about it. So just thought I'd throw that in there. Mm-hmm. Be warned.
Okay. And I hope it works.
Yeah, that's a tough one. That's a tough one. But underage drinking, certainly in the context of motor vehicles, is not to be tolerated anymore. If possible, we need to reduce or eliminate it because it's a tragedy when it gets mixed together. And Survivor Jack, we're talking about the efforts that people are going to go through to prevent underage drinking and drinking of any nature involved with motor vehicles. But also, it could be a day of remembrance and also a day of preparation if people thought, do you think maybe that's part of it as we talk about holidays that people can, celebrities can do sort of public service announcements about preparation and so forth?
Absolutely, getting more people involved. And by the way, Jamie Lee Curtis has an excellent video on, I think it's ready.gov, about how to prepare a emergency kit for your family.
Mm.
Something that you would store candles and toilet paper and a first aid kit and extra food and extra water and blankets and, all in this pack. And so celebrities are great endorsers. But I think we can come up with clever ways to do this and a wide range of things. So I encourage people to be creative, as I'm trying to be.
Right, right. Yeah.
Excuse me here. The three J's. That's the first that's come up. The Joe, Jackie, and Jack. I have to leave you now. I have to go prepare for a day on the river.
Right.
And make sure that a couple of young people that are up here with me are up and ready. Breakfast at 7, because I've been up since 4:30 our time, 5:30 your time here running around. But I wish all of our listeners the best. Survivor Jack, thank you.
Delighted.
And we'll be in touch. Jackie, Joe, you too. Yep. And I don't normally like to leave the show early, but one must run today.
The Kenai River awaits.
Yes, it does.
Tight lines, George, tight lines.
Thank you very much. All right, listeners, thank you very much for listening, and we will talk to you next week.
All right, great.
All right, bye-bye.
That's wonderful. I hope he has a wonderful day and catches a lot of salmon.
And bring some home for us.
And bring some home for us. So we're just, you know, fascinated with your transition, Survivor Jack, from being an entertainer. Do you think a lot of people in the business of entertaining take their roles as spokespeople, as potential role models seriously, or does it matter?
I do think that some of them are using their celebrity very wisely. I'm very impressed with Matt Damon and a bunch of those guys, that Angelina Jolie, who really gone into the world and walked the walk of this. Now, unfortunately, there are too many that are still ego-driven and money-driven, and they just don't have the empathy that I think it takes to go out there and say, look, I'm going to devote at least part of my time in life to helping other people. Mm-hmm. And the sad part is one of the great Nobel Prize winners of many years ago, Albert Schweitzer, who was a doctor, helped people in Africa. And he said, the one thing that I've learned is that only those among you who have sought and found how to serve will be truly happy. And that's what we've got to do. We've got to take the messages out there to say to people like George and his crew that are about to go into the woods, does everybody have their medicine with them?
Mm-hmm.
Do you have extra?
Mm-hmm.
Do you have it in two different places? If you dropped your bag and it got swept away in the river, do you have one in your pocket? Does your partner, your buddy, have one on them? My wife and I each have asthma inhalers in our bags because Jackie's got asthma. If she ran out or lost her bag, I've got to help. Those are the little things that we've forgotten, that we simply just don't see. We don't take the time to notice. I happen to have had the good fortune to have the eye to see it and the talent to come out and say, let's rethink what we're doing and let's look at these small messages that we forget, like the black pepper and the glue.
Duct tape.
Duct tape, yeah. All of those little things that could make all the difference.
Right. It's remarkable, and I think you're right. That I think even George, he's on vacation. He's out to enjoy himself. Certainly the other gentlemen with him aren't as well prepared as George normally is. George is a model of preparation here at home.
Right.
But not in, on the Kenai Peninsula. He's not a model of preparation there. And that's
right.
Just people, as they move out of their normal, zones, things change. And he's on vacation and... These are the things that we deal with, Survivor Jack.
Well, that's what you've got to understand more than anything else is people go, well, I've got it all in my car. My first question to the guy, and these are prepared guys.
Right.
And they go, well, what do? If you can't get to your car?
Mm-hmm.
And they stare at me because that's not something they've put into their equation.
In LA, that's unthinkable.
Exactly. and I got a kid out there, so and I'm always going, how's the case of water in your car, and how are the energy bars that won't spoil in the sun? You know, you know, you've got to know those things that might make a difference in that moment when you most need them.
Right.
Well, we're certainly trying.
Well,
right? Yes, but do or do not do. There is no try.
You've got to remember you've got to remember the wisdom of the masters.
Yeah. listen, Jack, give us tell us a little bit about what you're trying to do on the Ellen DeGeneres Show, and if people can go someplace and vote for you or something. I know you have a video.
Yeah, I just put out a video. First off, I've got a little website. It's called SurvivorJack.com. It's really not commercialized. It's literally links to my articles and videos.
Mm-hmm.
But if somebody just wanted to go to YouTube, they could put in Survivor Jack, Ellen DJ, just like a disc jockey. And then the video will come up, and you see myself and several of the characters trying to convince Ellen which of my split personalities she should use.
Can you tell us a little bit, Survivor Jack, in the few minutes that we have left, can you tell us a little bit about Ready Mask? It looks amazing.
Yeah. Ready Mask is a new product that I'm going to be doing a video on probably within the next 2 months, I'd say. I've got some information at my website, but what is the cool part? Think about this question. Joe, Jackie, if you had to go out and shop during a pandemic, what are you going to wear over your face when you go shopping?
Mm-hmm.
That's what got my attention with Ready Mask. It solved two problems. They have one of these masks, which you can see at the website, SurvivorJack.com. You just simply push it to your face, and it will, after you peel this little side thing off, and it will literally seal around your face. By the way, one thing I learned, Joe, is I've got a beard. I had to trim my beard underneath so the Ready Mask would fit more properly.
Mm-hmm.
But it also, they have one that has goggles. And if you saw the dust cloud coming down the street at 9/11, would it have been nice to reach in your backpack or in your purse and pull out something that you could have literally sealed your face shut? What if it's a riot and you've got to walk from your convention center back to your car through a cloud of tear gas?
Right.
Good heavens, wouldn't one of those little things, and it literally fits inside, I carry it in my notebook.
Mm-hmm.
It's not like it takes up a lot of space, Joe.
Right. It looks ideally designed for a quick mask that you need right now, right here. And it also looks like it would be allow you to get out in terms of a fire and stuff like that.
Correct. It helps to buy time is what it buys. For one thing, the mask, the way the breathing system operates on it, it actually cools the air. As you can imagine, that could be useful in a fire to bring it down a degree or two could make the difference.
Right.
So, yeah, little situations like that, those are things that I say, look, they're close enough that I will have them in my notebook, and it's not going to be that much of a big deal for me to carry.
Right.
But in the event I need it, would you rather have it and not need it, or would you rather need it and not have it?
Right, right. There you go. That's words of wisdom from SurvivorJack.com. SurvivorJack.com. And I think, you know, we've had a wonderful time having you on the show, Jack.
I'd be delighted to come and serve your audience at any time. It's been a pleasure to be here and meet you and Jackie and George.
Wonderful. Wonderful. And thank you, Jackie.
Always a pleasure, Joe.
All right. That's our show for today, ladies and gentlemen. And, of course, we'll be back on Thursday with South Bay Spotlight and on Friday with the Manhattan Beach Chamber 360. So please join us then. Maybe subscribe to our channel on Blog Talk Radio, The South Bay Show, and we'll see you then. Thank you very much for joining us. Bye-bye now.